Okay. This is Elisa again, and I'm so happy we have Lorna here. I have known Lorna for quite a few years. I can't even remember the first time that I met her. She came to our New England conference and did a wonderful work working with young people with story and the hero's journey. And then I took another workshop with her on the hero's journey and using the symbolism and the different stages. And she's a wealth of information. She's also a wonderful storyteller and a prolific writer. Lorna just told me, I knew she had books, but she has 8 books, 3 stories and anthologies, and is currently writing a trilogy. So that's lovely. She's done so many things related to helping people manage after traumatic situations like the Virginia Tech shooting. She was involved with the community at large in dealing with the aftermath. She has run a nonprofit called Crossroads Story Center for youth at risk, helping them through story and programs for abused women and their children. And currently, you are the storyteller in residence for Compass House, but that's been going on since 1995, and Try House, which I'm not sure what that is. So we're just very excited to have you, Lorna, and I will mute and turn it over to you. Okay? And if anybody gets cut off, just please call back. It happens once in a while. Just call back and you'll get back in again, okay? All right. Here I go.
Thank you, Elisa. I'm very happy to be here this evening, and this is rather an informal session on my part. It's very hard to talk about the work that I do in any outline format. So the evening is about stories for navigating grief, and also personal narrative and how that can change the course of our lives. This is experimental on my part. I am not a trained therapist. I do have trauma counseling certification, but that is the gist of it. A lot of what I will be talking about is self-exploration and a continuing journey, but I think it's important enough that I wanted to share it with others, and apparently somebody thought so, because here I am. So let me first of all begin with the idea of story for healing. I think we often, I may be the only one, I don't know, but I think we often think of it in terms of what we are doing to someone else, that we are giving them the gift of story that we have chosen for a particular issue or for a particular person, or we are just giving a wonderful story and each person who listens to it finds what they need from that. But I wonder how many of you, I know I've done this in the last few years, but how many of you have actually thought of how story heals you, the storyteller, and how we can apply that to helping other people heal themselves through story. One of the advantages that anyone who's interested in storytelling or who is a storyteller has is they have a life that's been immersed in the idea of story. So somewhere along the line, I think it was 1985, I found out that there was this thing called storytelling, but previous to that, I didn't know it had a name. But there was a foundation being laid all of my life that would eventually lead me to that. And it's because of that rich immersion in story that I feel very equipped to do this work. And this is one of the problems that I see happening in society, but I think we're doing a lot as a storytelling community to change that. And that is that children are often growing up without these rich stories that they can put in their pocket. And the more we can tell them stories, the more tools they will have when they get to a stage where they need this. The other thing I think that we have going for us is an understanding of symbol and metaphor. I have made a really exacting point of including that in the workshops that I am doing with Healing Stories. So when I do visit Tri House that Alyssa mentioned, and that is a transitional home for girls, so they go there on their way to hopefully something better.
Okay.
And they're finishing their education.
Oh,
they have jobs. They have support. They live there. And I get to do a six-week program once a year with the girls that are there. And because the girls don't have a big turnaround, that's enough to really touch a brand new audience each time. They would have me more if they could afford it. But the point I want to make is that one of the very first things we do after we have a Getting to Know You session is spend time teaching them symbolism and metaphor by telling them stories and then sort of pulling it apart and discussing, well, what did this piece mean to you? And I typically use, believe it or not, Hansel and Gretel. You know, we often think of that as a very little child's story, but it speaks volumes to these young people that I'm working with. So we usually use that story because it's chock full of all kinds of metaphors and symbols. I'm not going to go through all those now, but of course if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to discuss that. But my point being that if they can learn to look at a story or to listen to a story, I mean, it doesn't have to be a specific analysis, but it sort of gets inside our psyche, and when we listen to a story, if we are knowledgeable about that, those things become more enlarged for us or more obvious mm-hmm. to us. And I always tell them the strangest things in the stories are probably where the heart of the healing in that story resides. So if something seems strange to you when you're hearing a story, take a closer look at it. I'm going to go back to this idea of healing ourselves and healing others. You know, doctors heal us, and in the case that we're talking about, we are the doctors doing the healing, but it's a whole different kind of healing. It's psychological, it's emotional. They have done a lot of brainwave tests, and they have seen actual changes within the brain waves, and I can't cite those studies. There are other storytellers in the healing story community who can do that. But it's a remarkable thing when you think about the human brain and how it runs this whole system of our bodies. And it stands to reason that if it is powerful enough to do that, and to hold the kind of information that it holds, I mean, it is a computer, basically, then it stands to reason that we might be actually able to use the brain to change itself, to change the body as a result. And that's part of what I want to talk about. The other thing I just want to mention in passing is I think of us as modern-day shamans. Not that you have to think about that in terms of a spirituality, but think of it in terms of the shaman opens a door, takes the client, the patient, what have you, I don't know what they call them, but takes them on a journey, brings them back safely, and that's really what we do. We are opening doors with the stories that we tell. No one story, and I said this is an experimental discussion, it's because I can't choose a story that I say, this is the story that will work for everyone. And that's the tricky part, because there is no one story that speaks to everyone. In each of our repertoires, we may find a story that is so multi-layered we can pull it apart like an onion, and those are very useful stories because they can become the base story for what we're doing. When I went to Blacksburg, Virginia, for instance, after the shootings there on campus, which seems so long ago, and we look at the multitude of similar situations that have happened since then, it's mind-boggling. But what I did there was a circle of stories where we started out creating the world then we destroyed the world, then we put it back together again, because the goal was to give the community an opportunity to rebuild their identities. And in the case of the story that became my central story for that, it was Pandora's Box and the idea of hope chasing the dark things away. So that became central. So we have those stories in our repertoire. That's very good. The other thing that makes it difficult to think of this as more than an experimental discussion is that the real healing, the real true healing that happens is a very personal thing. I'm not sure how we measure it. And that's something I think that the storytelling community has been considering. A very important part of what we need to be doing is thinking, how do we measure this? So let me just tell you how all of this thinking started for me. And it began with my really terrible, horrible, awful year. That's what I've titled it. And that was September 2009 was the very beginning of that. We lost our old dog, so all of those people on the line right now who said you had precious puppies, give them a little pat on the head for me. I miss my old guy, but he was old. He was 18, and he had a couple of years where we had to carry him up and down the stairs, but he was still eating and wagging his tail, so that was cool. So it was no surprise when he died, but I didn't expect the ball that would roll on from there. So in November, had a very strange incident where I had brought a fish that I keep in my fish pond in the yard. I raised him from a little guy till he was 18, 20 inches long, and bring him in for the winter into the tank and covered it over with a screen, and decided he needed a companion for the winter, so I went out to get a couple of more of the larger fish because my pond isn't deep enough to sustain them all winter. And when I came indoors, there he was dead on my floor. He had pushed the screen off the top of the tank and jumped to his doom. So you add that to the dog passing away, and it was getting difficult at this point. But one of the things that a friend said to me, and as a storyteller, you see, I can make these images and I can create these stories in my head, but one of the things that a friend said to me was, oh, he took the big journey. And that was very powerful because I started to think about the big journey. What does that mean? And I started to imagine that my fish was out there someplace with a hobo's bindle across his shoulder, and he was having a grand old time. Now, I don't want to make light of loss, but sometimes we need those little moments where our imagination can take us out of the moment and show us that there are other possibilities. Make a long story short, in December, my mother, who had not been well for a long time, she died, same year. A month later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, early stage. I'm doing fine. I am 5 years cancer-free, yay. But at the same time, on the same day that I had to go in for my biopsy, which I dreaded, I got a call that my dad had gotten sick. And he was one of those guys who never got sick, ever. And he never came out of the hospital. So in March, 3 days after my surgery, my dad passed away. And somehow, I kept going, and somehow there was actually something that helped me to do that, and it was story. I needed a support system. I needed to be able to say to my friends, my dad may be dying, and I have breast cancer. But I needed to be able to do that in a way that I didn't drag them into despair, because I have friends who care about me very much, and the last thing you want to do is traumatize all the people around you by laying on them all of your problems. So I needed to take this journey and get this biopsy that I was dreading. And I had two friends who had just died from breast cancer from ignoring it, ignoring the early signs. And I said, that's not going to be me. I'm going to do this in honor of them. I am going to be the warrior that leaps off the edge into the unknown. And that created the determined storyteller, which is my alter ego. So my alter ego posted on Facebook that she was a warrior walking and came to the edge of an abyss and knew that she had to leap into the abyss to find out what was there and didn't know what to do. And a really amazing thing happened. I have quite a few friends who are versed in story, and not all of them are professional storytellers, but all of a sudden people were sending me pieces of the story. So somebody sent me the tell from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I guess that can become anything you want it to be. And so it became a parachute, and I ended up with a bronze breastplate, a sword of light, a shield of protection, a basket of glowing orbs, and an army of angels by the time we were done. And they followed me through this journey to the very end when my warrior defeated the monster in the cave that's name was cancer. And it was a very satisfying moment when we got to the end of that story and everybody was with me. And I realized that if I can use story to heal myself, to at least help me to navigate the grief and navigate the experience, then why couldn't I use story to help other people do that? Over the years now, it's been 5 years, six since it started, I have been giving out all of those tools that were given to me. I will write to somebody who I see has something going on, and I will say, well, here's a glowing basket of orbs to light your way, and we begin this story, and we take this journey together. So that was the really terrible, horrible, awful year, and how I realized I could navigate grief with story. And then about, 4 months ago, and I can't even recall at this point in time exactly what happened to make me want to start creating this new story for myself. Well, it was a series of hits, you know, and when you have a series of hits in your life, and everything comes in threes or more sometimes, it really beats you down. Just think about bullies. And Alyssa, you'll appreciate this because I know you do a lot of work with bullying. They will beat their victims, even if it's verbally and not necessarily physically, to try to get the victim to believe that they are less than they are. And once we start believing we are less than we are telling that story, even if we don't put it in words, we are transmitting that to everyone around us, and it becomes such a big part of ourselves. I thought about this. We are not born into this world with any labels. Now, if you're a religious person and you believe in a creator, the only label I think you have on you is that you are that creator's child. But somewhere along the line, we become the artist, we become the worker, we become the mom, we become the caregiver, we become stupid, we become smart, whatever it is, and we start adding all of these things into our story. So go back to the brain and how it runs the system. What if we start telling a different story? What if we start saying to our brain, this negativity is making me more negative? So who am I really? What is my character? So you're giving yourself a character just like you would a story. You can give yourself a setting just like you would a story. And you can start to see that your life is a journey and a running story from start to finish, never ending, chapter by chapter, turn the page, something new happens. So once I started telling myself a different story, I am successful. Not I want to be. I am successful. I am a storyteller. I am a successful author. And all of this, and I started feeling better about myself. So I was getting pretty beaten down, and when I started to tell those stories to myself, going back to the foundation I have of life story, of story and immersion throughout my life, then I was able to create a metaphor for myself, a mythology for myself, and it just turned everything around. The stories that other people were telling about me changed. The way I felt about myself changed. My level of success changed. So that's basically it. I'm just going to give you three words to think about how when we think of the stories that are around these words, I want you to imagine the differences these three words make. Is your character a victim, a survivor, or a thriver? I'll say that again. Is your character a victim, a survivor, or a thriver? Those three words are very different, and they have a whole different connotation. So our goal is to take our listeners from the point, and ourselves, from the point of thinking of ourselves as victims to thinking of ourselves as thrivers. And that may be stories that have to change over a continuum of time. So I think that's about, I've been timing myself the best I can. That's about 26 minutes. That's, I think, a pretty good time for us to open it up and see if anybody wants to add anything, if anyone would like to ask questions. I realize that this seems very unorganized, but as I said, it's experimental, and I want this to be a real discussion about where these ideas can take us. So I think we can open the lines, Alyssa.
Yeah, people can unmute themselves, star six, and thank you, Lorna. I don't think it was disorganized at all. I think you took us on a lovely journey through your own experience, through several different aspects of your experience, and let us in on some places where you have helped others, and just gave us a little teaser with some of those that we definitely want to hear more about. And fascinating. I love the work that you did. Yeah, so anybody want to jump in with a first comment or question?
I do. My name is April.
Hi, April.
I'm very interested in your last positioning of things with a victim, a survivor, or a thriver. Right now, I know clearly I am not a victim. I would love to know how to get from survivor to thriver. My husband of 30-plus years died a month ago, and I am really floundering about how do I go about doing what I do for the rest of my life. What have you got for me?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, it's a very difficult question. First of all, I will say this is my own experience. Keep moving. Don't get stuck in one place. Keep moving, even if it's tiny little baby steps. That's a survivor. A survivor is somebody who came through it. And you came through it. And you probably still have a bit of a journey to go through the tunnel. I always think of it as this tunnel. And you could see the speck of light at the other end. And it seems so far away, and sometimes it gets closer, and sometimes it feels like it gets farther. So you say, I'm telling you a story right now. I want you to picture this image. So a lot of this is about imagery. And walking toward the end of that tunnel, I can say that you will know when you come out at the other end. It's going to be quite a different experience. And when you come out of the other end of that tunnel, you will be a thriver. You will not only have survived the journey, but you will be in complete, you will have a complete opportunity to change the lives of other people with the story of your journey. So to go from, I mean, you're not a victim, and I'm glad that you can see that, but this whole idea of being a survival is that point where we're still walking through that tunnel. And you want to get to the other end of it. So how to do that is to keep moving forward, looking for the positive stories in your life and focusing on those more than anything. I hope that makes sense.
It does.
And you will know when you come through that, and it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Your husband was a big part of your life. And I'm kind of, you know, I when my parents died, my dad was 76. My husband's 75, so believe me, I think about this every single day.
Yeah, it's something that you may acknowledge, but not until it's really right in front of you do you see it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you kindly, Lorna. I appreciate your good comments tonight.
Yeah, this is Elisa. Lorna, I like what you said about creating a character for yourself and, you know, how you did that when you had that terrible, horrible, no good year that you decided to, you know, picture yourself on a journey as a warrior. And maybe you could talk more about how that, having that imagery helped you to navigate yourself from survivor to thriver.
Well, you know, it speaks to the hero's journey. And I will say that a hero, and April, you're very much the hero, even if you don't feel like you're a hero. We have an interesting modern-day definition of hero. We think it's somebody who leaps into fires and rescues people. Well, that's one kind of hero, but real, true heroes in the sense of the hero's journey story are very reluctant. They don't even want to take the journey. So my traveler, and I was just a traveler before I became a warrior hero, you know, my traveler came to the edge of an abyss and knew that she had to leap. I didn't want to. I mean, who would? Who would ever want to be in a position where they'd be out of control, in the dark, with a risk of dying? You know, nobody ever wants to be in that situation. So what does the hero do? Well, the hero has to call on all of the tools that they have inside, and often they will have a mentor. And in my case, it was my friends on Facebook who became my mentors. They became the mentors in the story. Think about Lord of the Rings and Gandalf. Think about Harry Potter and Dumbledore. Think about all of those stories, and Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, Yoda. These are the mentors who shore up the hero, but in actuality, they're all part of the same character. We have a very hard time grasping the large whole. And so what mythology allows us to do is to explode that whole into multiple pieces so we can examine each one independently. How did I become the warrior? I became the warrior in my situation, in my story, by taking a leap of faith, by knowing that I had two paths I could take. One was easy, but the easy thing would have been to ignore the problem, but the end of the story would not be good. And if I wanted to get the good ending of the story, then I had to take the difficult choice, and I had to make that leap. I don't know if that answers your question, Elisa.
Yeah. No, I just I love that you brought that in, the reluctant hero, and that it is a leap of faith. But we do have helpers, and the more we can draw on them, the better.
And that's why it is important to surround ourselves with people that we trust. And if we are unable to do that, when we draw on the story people, you know, the godmothers in the stories and the wizards in the stories that help us.
Right.
So I'm not sure if anyone else has any questions. I'm not sure who is still with us.
I just would like to say thank you. I agree this was not the least bit disjointed. It was wonderfully rich, and I am utterly grateful to you.
And this is April speaking?
Skylar,
okay, I'm sorry. Well,
that's
good,
okay.
Skylar. And, you know, anyone who has questions or comments or wants to send me information after this teleconference, I'm always open to that. We have to hold hands as a community, and I don't have all the answers, but sometimes by thinking about your questions, I discover new things too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anybody else have a question?
I got.
Yes,
go ahead.
This is Laura, and I was just wondering if you have some more ideas about setting yourself up to do this work. I know you've worked with the young people. You've worked at tech. When you use the image of the shaman who, you know, in a way is, you know, an ancestral image of, and sort of like a doctor, but establishing your relationships with people who you're going to use story with to help them heal. So what are some ideas of how you are in relationship with people? Is it with individuals, with classes, groups? What are some thoughts you have about that?
Well, that's a really good question, and I, you know, my answer may not be the way everybody has managed, and Elisa has, I think, created quite, I feel bad about calling it a business, Elisa, because it's so much more than that, but you've managed to build a clientele, let me put it that way. So maybe you want to add to this, but for myself, this is not the way I pay my bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I can say it. You know, it's everyday contact with people. I was blessed to go to Turkey and Greece last year, and it was an amazing journey. But I took this part of myself with me to reach out to refugees that were on the streets or to some of the Muslim women. The hugs and the smiles, you know, that's healing.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't all about sitting down and let me tell you a story. It's kind of, for me, it's very hard to separate myself from this work. It's what I do when I'm having a casual conversation with somebody
mm-hmm.
in an elevator. But on a concrete level, when my niece ran away from home in 1994, that's when I began my journey as a healing storyteller. And I needed help. I needed to understand runaways. I needed information. I had all the horror stories of what could happen to a girl on the streets going through my head, so I reached out to a local runaway shelter. And they gave me information, and I told them what I do as a storyteller, and they invited me to start telling stories to their kids. I've been doing it for over 20 years now, twice a month. Started out where they would give me some money, then they lost a lot of grants, mm-hmm. and I felt it was too important not to do it, so I don't get paid. I mm-hmm. do it. The Tri-House, however, they do pay me with, it's connected with the Catholic Church, so they have some money from the diocese, and when I go, they do give me pay there. You just need to look around. If you want to work with the elderly, if you want to work with at-risk youth, if you want to get involved with, if you have crisis services in your area, you need to just start contacting people and saying, I would like to come and tell stories. Sit down, meet with them. In some cases, there may be money attached, and in other cases, you may just have to volunteer for a while mm-hmm. until you get your feet wet. I also went through this step of getting my trauma certification, counseling certification, because I created all this stuff on myself. I didn't have anybody to tell me how to do this work. I didn't have a psychology background or a therapy background, and I wanted to make sure I was doing it right. So it was just a checks and balances for myself, mm-hmm. but it was useful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are other people who are out there making it more of a, I don't know, a business. For lack of a better word, I'm sorry.
No,
that's not me.
I work with retreats for people with cancer, and we use art a lot, and we let people tell their stories, you know, not in any metaphorical or symbolic way, but telling their story is a huge thing. But I would like to start using story even more in the midst of the retreats to elicit their stories, maybe with metaphor and symbols built in.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of see, you know, the story, you go as a storyteller and no matter what you do. And I happen to fortunately be involved in a lot of work where if I develop myself that way as a storyteller, it would be one more thing to add, a dimension.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, sometimes you have to be as good a listener as you are a storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in the quiet moments when you're listening, that's when people will come to you and tell their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just as healing as when you are telling them stories.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would say that is the bulk of what I do, is listen to other people's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in that, if their stories, it'd be interesting to see how somebody's story might change over time from them first telling it when they're in the middle of the really terrible, horrible, awful
mm-hmm,
year,
mm-hmm.
to where they're telling it on the other side of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's going to change. It's going to be part of their journey.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is Cora. I have a question.
Okay.
I have actually two things I wanted to ask about. One is, when you talked earlier about using Hansel and Greta, can't even say it right, and you talked about the symbols and the metaphors. I don't know if you could share a little bit about exactly what you were talking about when you mentioned
about that. About symbol and metaphor?
Right.
Okay.
And specifically, you talked about Hansel and Greta.
I have at my desk, and this book is contested by some people, but it is The Uses of Enchantment by Bruno Bettelheim. I also have quite a few books in my resources on symbolism, as well as a book on dreams and all of the symbols around dreams. And I have gone to those a few times when I've been researching a story, But just looking at Hansel and Gretel, for instance, it's fairly accepted, although there are always going to be cultural differences you need to keep in mind. But it's fairly accepted, for instance, that a house in a story is supposed to be, a house is supposed to be a sense of security. So in Hansel and Gretel, they lose their security when their parents force them from their home. And when they see the witch's house that is made of gingerbread, not only do they want to devour that so that they are internalizing the security, but they're hungry. They're physically hungry, they're emotionally hungry. So that's symbolism. The forest is typically represents the unknown. And in all of these stories, Red Riding Hood, Hansel and Gretel, wherever anybody is going into a dark forest, we know they're taking a journey. They are going into the unknown. They are jumping into the abyss. It's all representative of kind of the same thing. There's a lot, if you look at Grimm's version of Hansel and Gretel, there are a lot of white things. There's a white bird, there's the white breadcrumbs, there's glowing white pebbles, a white swan, a white bird, a white cat on a roof. The moon is white, representing the light, and that is the mentor. That in all of those cases, those are helpers in the story. So
excellent.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's excellent. I mean, I sort of knew kind of what you were calling. I could come up with some of the symbols myself, but I was just interested for some ideas exactly. So how do you use those? So do you use those when you're talking to people, when you're telling
the story? Well, when I do my work with the teens, we tell the story. I tell them the story, and then we spend an evening listing all of the things in the story and talking about what they could mean.
That's got to be really powerful.
Yeah, something that you can also try is changing them up. So what if the white things in that story were black things? And I do spend time telling them that we're not talking about skin color when we talk about black and white.
Right.
We're talking about the light and the dark, the evil and the good in our world. And not to equate that in the same way, but you can try switching those things up. And what if we tell this story where the parents don't kick the children out of the house? Well, that changes the story completely, doesn't it? So you can kind of look at metaphor that way, too.
Excellent.
How will it change the story? And that's powerful, because if you can change the story of Hansel and Gretel by changing the metaphors, what
can
you do with your own personal story?
Right. Excellent. That's really good. Yeah, because if I can change the story, I can change what happens tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So my other question was, do you have like an outline or something you use in that 6 weeks that you will be able to share?
An outline for...
You do the 6 weeks program once a year, you said, with the teens?
Well, here I go. I have to tell you about my books, right? Dancing at the Crossroads. Dancing at the Crossroads from Parkhurst Brothers. There are three books. One is a collection of stories and activities. These are all for at-risk youth, but some of them can cross over with different audiences. There's a caregiver's guide, and there's also a practitioner's guide. The practitioner's guide has all of the programs that I've ever developed from my work with at-risk youth, including the outlines for the different sessions.
Excellent.
In a way, I'm giving it all away, but I get the royalties.
No, you're sharing it, but,
the point being is I really think it's just too important. I didn't want to keep it to myself. So it's in that practitioner's guide.
Okay. Josh, just get in touch with Ted. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. That really helped a lot.
I'm glad. You're welcome.
And I have enjoyed your talk. I didn't think it was on whatever you said it was. Scattered or whatever the word was that you used.
Oh, good, good. That was me checking everybody's pulse and just making sure.
Right. Anybody else?
Lorna, this is Skylar. I'm just wondering what kind of follow-up do you see as being advisable with any special need group, for lack of a better way of putting it? Long-term, there's the formal together time, but then is there checking in periodically afterward?
I think it's going to depend on your situation, Skylar. When I'm working at the runaway shelter, I may have the kids for 30 minutes and never see them again.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, in fact, sometimes they'll be there, and when I go in to tell the story, they're already gone before they even get to have my session. So it's very transient, very transient.
Okay.
The group home, transitional home, I have them for 6 weeks. We go from them not having any clue what we're going to do at all or what story is, to them creating some piece of artwork at the end that helps them to tell their story, because it's been my experience they can kind of hide behind that, and that's a good thing. They're still not completely trusting. My feedback or my follow-up with them is that I get asked back every year to do more work. So no harm is being done, but I don't have the kind of situation where I have an ongoing client over a period of time. So I might see them 6 times, 8 times. But as far as follow-up, I'm not in a clinical situation, so I don't know. Are you thinking about doing clinical work?
Well, I facilitate support groups for caregivers.
Okay.
And, you know, my concern is I will give people my phone number at the end of a session and at the end of a gathering. And I've had people call me as much as 3 years out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I've started doing is, those who are willing to share contact information so that there is somebody to reach out to after we've had our gatherings. I'm not a psychotherapist.
Okay.
And so I walk that fine line. Make sure when I leave the group that they have tools that they can access later in the form of reaching out to other people as well as their story.
I think that's important, and I agree with you. And I think that's a great way to do it. I can tell you that I make sure that the staff where I'm working is
mm-hmm.
aware that they may need to do follow-up, or if I'm hearing really difficult stories coming out of the kids, then I will go to staff and say, you know, so-and-so told this story tonight, and just you might want to follow up with it because
gotcha.
That is
yeah.
their work. It's not my work, but that's
right.
important, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, anybody else? Okay, this has been a very rich evening, Lorna. And this is Elisa, and we thank you so much. I wanted to let everyone know, too, in case you don't know, that the Healing Story Alliance website has a wonderful bibliography on there, hopefully including Lorna's books, and also that we just found out that this on December 8th we will be having Skylar Ford, who was just speaking with us, leading a teleconference on her work with caregivers, both professional and family members, and persons living with Alzheimer's and related dementia illnesses, and we're really looking forward to that. So keep tuned on the website, and we'll send out messages. And anything else anyone wants to say?
I have pages of note for which I am grateful. Thank you, Lorna.
Thank you so much, Lorna. You're welcome. Thank you.
All righty. Take care, everyone.
There they go.
Good night.